Welcome to the Midsters Podcast, your podcast for inspiration on being bold and saying yes to making the most of your midlife.
I think this will be an interesting conversation, Leslie Ann.
I think all of our conversations are interesting, Maria.
Well, I was thinking about the conversation itself, and it was hard to come up with the title. But the title that I chose, or the title that I think we'll choose when we end up putting it on air, is Before the World Told Us Who to Be. And I think I got to that because I wanted to have a discussion of who you thought you were, or who I thought I was. Prior to kind of the social conditioning. And I think back to childhood when we just were. Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately, expectations come into play, right? Of who we're going to be as a child to our parents, what kind of student we're going to be, what kind of friend we're going to be, what kind of employee. It just goes on and on. It actually is totally entwined in roles that we take on, which are natural to do. But yet I sometimes think now that I'm in midlife, I am being reintroduced to myself.
I think it's especially a pertinent conversation for women in midlife. And I would say kind of sort of mid to late midlife. Mm-hmm. Because we were really the first generation of women who were pushing beyond the limitations that had been placed on earlier generations of women, but societal expectations of us hadn't yet changed.
Right.
So we had opportunities that earlier generations of women didn't have, but society was still, I think, kind of, especially when we were growing up, still looking at women a little bit narrowly in terms of what we were supposed to be doing.
Right.
And I certainly felt that growing up.
Well, I think during those, talking about midlife, the years leading up to like later midlife, we find ourselves in these roles that, like you said, society expects us, but also we want and expect for ourselves. So it's not that I wasn't living who I wanted to be. It's just now I'm in a place in my life where I can circle back to a lot of those things or the way I was when I was young, like more adventurous. I mean, time opens up, right? Space opens up. We shed roles, or I don't want to say we shed, they shift. Mm-hmm. Like our parenting shifts, our career and our interest with our work, either we don't have it anymore or it shifts. And we have all this wonderful space. So what do we do with it? And how to, I don't like the phrase reinventing yourself in midlife. It's very popular and I get it. And it's not that I hate it, but for me, it's not reinventing myself. It's finding myself again, right?
Rediscovering yourself.
It really is. It's the fun piece as well. I've had fun through all kinds of stages in my life, but I'm definitely having a lot of fun now. But I have a question for you. Is there a piece that you have in your life now that was kind of hidden or you couldn't pay attention to or spend time with over the last 20 years that was a piece of yourself when you were younger and now it is again?
I would say that I'm working at identifying those things and that I find, especially now, and really that process began when my kids entered high school, because there was a lot less hands-on, you know, making sure everybody got their homework done, getting dinner done on time every night. I used to make soup on Sunday and we would just eat it all week because they had sports and it was impossible to sort out dinner. But that actually freed up time for me to kind of think about what were the things I wanted to do. And one of the things I sort of got actively engaged in at that point was reading again. I used to read all the time for pleasure. And then I didn't because I just didn't have time. And I would pick up a book and read a chapter and not get to it again for a month, which just isn't satisfying. So at that stage, I had a little more time to begin to do some things for myself, which necessarily meant thinking about what I wanted to do and what resonated with me. But really, that's picked up in spades since I retired.
It's a wonderful time for us right now in this stage and being able to do those things. And I think about the things that I enjoyed when I was a child and that just innate, wonderful joy. I've been fortunate to be happy most of my life. I mean, we all have things, but that innate joy, what really resonated in me as a younger child? And I am spending more time doing those things now. I was a very curious child, and I'm finding that my curiosity is definitely back in spades. And this podcast is part of it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm curious about what we're going to talk about, what you're going to say, how it's going to resonate, how I'm going to think about my thoughts and what we're going to talk about. So, and even like exploring the different topics. I mean, there is a curiosity there, very similar to the curiosity that I had as a child. And the other is nature. Like, I like going out in nature. I've always loved nature, but I like to smell it. I like to touch it. I like to see it, just like weather. I mean, I like all of that. And I remember one of my favorite things as a child was tadpoles. Mm. I was fascinated with tadpoles. We had these bird baths in the back of our yard in Australia, and I used to catch tadpoles and I'd put them in, you know, a glass jar, and then I'd put them back and I would watch them grow. And I'm finding that that curiosity is back. It's not that it wasn't there during those other years in between childhood, but we're busy, right? We're getting educated. We're raising families. We're working. There's just a lot. And I feel like life, it really does come full circle in so many ways.
You know, one of the things that I've been exploring a little bit recently, you know, back in our first season, we had an interview of a lovely woman, Martha Antoven, who was life coach.
Yes.
And one of the points that she made was the value of boredom.
Mm-hmm.
And like being bored is a space where internal change can happen. I remember being very bored a lot as a kid, lying in the grass and just watching the clouds go by because I literally had nothing else.
Doing shapes.
Yeah. And at the time, I didn't value that. It was difficult to be bored.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of rediscovering the importance of boredom in my life and trying deliberately to leave time for myself where I have nothing, mm-hmm. where I have to kind of figure out how to entertain my mind, but not in the way I usually do with distractions, right? But like, maybe I just need to sit and be in my mind. And that actually is rediscovering a part of my childhood mm-hmm. that maybe I didn't value even then. So it wasn't fun.
Right.
But it was important.
Right.
And I kind of feel like it's important now because it creates the space where discovery happens.
Mm-hmm. I think that I find that space, and you might too, in walks and in nature. Mm-hmm. I hate to use the word boredom, but you're not doing another activity. So you are in your head. I think that there's a meditation piece. So we call it boredom at childhood. I used to love looking at the clouds and making shapes of them and so forth as well. But there was a meditation piece that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think that that's what you're kind of talking about.
It's because
when you're in boredom, you're not, there's not the noise, right?
Right.
There's not the noise.
It's a little different though, because actually I would say it's separate for me from walks, because walking to me is still an activity. It's purposeful. I'm talking about just being.
Doing nothing.
Doing nothing.
Yeah.
Being home alone with nothing to do. And then just kind of finding my way through the day, like letting my thoughts have some space and time to ruminate. And a part of that, part of why I sort of recognize that now for its value, was being in Tanzania, where people live in a way that have very few distractions. Mm-hmm. And consequently, I think they live with a lot more joy. And I'd like to sort of find my joy again, but my instinct is telling me it lies in doing less rather than more.
It's rest.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way.
Space.
Yeah. Rest and space. No, I like that. I can last about 5 seconds. No, I have times where I'm, like I said, when I walk, yes, it's purposeful, but I love being in my own head at that time. It's like a meditating piece for me. Anything else that you're discovering now, or discovering is not the word, but maybe.
Well, closely related to that sense of boredom is the value of being alone. Like, I exist. I think I got to a point as a child, and I think this often happens, you sort of doubt your importance
mm-hmm.
if you don't have people around you that are responding to you and that are giving you feedback in some way and valuing you.
Right.
It's really important to step back a little bit and just spend some time valuing yourself. It's okay to be alone. That's actually something that has been a consistent thread in my life, although maybe I didn't really pick up on it as much as I could have at other points. But I have on occasion gone out to dinner by myself.
Right.
And it is a very strange thing to be your own company at dinner. It's also really valuable. And I'm kind of doing a little bit more of that now. And the lovely thing is that my husband really gets that. So I can kind of go off and just be by myself. He doesn't really care.
You know, just thinking about the topic again, before the world told us who to be, I'm thinking a lot about the social conditioning. And I think that this generation kind of fights back on that better than we probably did. I think the majority of people in our generation felt like we needed to be a wife and a mother and then later on have that career. But as a child, maybe that wasn't what we wanted to do. I can speak for myself. I mean, I've talked about this on the podcast. I didn't really want some big career. It was never what I wanted. As a child, I always knew I wanted to be a parent. And I think a lot of the reason that I gravitated toward that parenting role is because I wanted to stay in that fun childhood space. And I did. No matter what my kids did, when they were learning to do their skateboards, I was down in the cul-de-sac on a skateboard. When they were biking, I was biking. When they were doing a scavenger hunt, I was doing a scavenger hunt. So I think that that was a piece that I did not let society or the world tell me that I could not do that. So I did have a career as well. And I enjoyed that. And that is a social conditioning in some ways. I mean, most of us end up having some type of career. But I think it is important that we all think a little bit about, on the earlier side of midlife, those things that you can still weave through and not shed and still have those childhood joys in your life.
Is there anything in particular, though, that you feel is social conditioning did lead you away from?
No, I say no pretty quick. Let me just think about that. I pushed back on having that big career, which I think would have been social conditioning. At that point, women were getting in the workforce and they were taking it on. They're getting a lot of advanced degrees. They were moving up the corporate ladder. And I saw that. And there were so many opportunities where my work would ask me, would you consider going full time? You know, would you consider taking on this leadership role or supervisory role? And I said no, because I think I just wanted to be that a child with my child, with my children. So I think I pushed back. I'm sure if I thought a little bit more about that, there has to be some that I allowed to be conditioned. But I kind of tried to find my own adaptive self.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I definitely felt that there were certain behaviors that were acceptable in women and some that were not. And I certainly adapted my behavior to meet what I thought women were supposed to be. So not too loud, not too assertive, apologetic, offering space to other people first, you know, deferring to other people first. And not that those things are bad, but as I have moved along in my life, I have started to question why I need to do that. So if I do something that deliberately is intended to offend you, I will certainly apologize.
Mm-hmm.
But if I do something that the act of doing it might ruffle your feathers because it steps into what you think is your space, as long as I think that space is also available to me, I'm not apologizing for that.
Right.
And that's something that I'm trying to reclaim from childhood, right? When you're a kid and you're playing, there's a little bit of rough and tumble and somebody turns out on top and nobody apologizes to anybody for that. I think we learned as women, or I certainly learned as a woman, that particularly in connection with interactions with men, I needed to be more deferential, and I'm not deferential anymore. I have reclaimed my right to not be deferential.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I think also if we want to talk about, I guess, the social conditioning of women, there's a lot there.
Oh, yeah.
So I think every woman our age went probably through that. One would be to not stand up for myself if it was going to be in conflict with a male voice. I've definitely shedded that. Ask my husband. So I think more than like letting go of that, of the things I enjoyed in childhood, it's with the social conditioning, it's more of what you're talking about. Yeah, there's definitely a lot with the gender piece and being the female piece,
mm-hmm.
for sure. You know, I think about who we were and just as kids and the dreams that we had. And I do think it all comes full circle. And so many girls, maybe not all, and men had their version of it as well. But I think about the fairy tale. We all had the fairy tale about finding our prince and living happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And I think about that, and life turned out well for me. Mm-hmm. I found my prince. We all have things in our lives. Nothing's a full fairy tale. But I think the nice thing about midlife and my age right now, that was one fairy tale. Guess what? I've got more fairy tales. They're just starting. And so to have more fairy tales for the next chapter of our life, to become who we are and to embrace all those things that curiosity and creativity bring us, I think is just beautiful. And I think that there are a lot of fairy tales, and we only think of them as kids, and we think about one or two of them. But why don't we think about it
now? So what kind of fairy tale would you have in midlife?
So a fairy tale for me, like the new, like finding my prince, lived happily ever after. I live happily. So I found my prince. So what's now? It's finding myself. Mm. It's finding it in the curious piece of me. It's finding it in the creativity piece of me. It's a beautiful story of me finding myself. That always was there. Like also even like the confidence when you're young, you feel you can do anything. Mm-hmm. My going and getting my captain's license or doing a triathlon or sitting here doing a podcast is a fairy tale in itself, in the fact that we dream and it happens for us,
mm-hmm.
and it makes us happy and it's soul fulfilling and it puts a smile on our face. And so I think that it's not just for childhood. I think in midlife, when a lot of responsibilities shift, we have time to dream again, mm-hmm. and go after those dreams. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense. It does make sense. I have a variation on that.
Okay.
I love that. I think the way it spins out for me is a piece that of myself that I think existed when I was a kid. At least I feel that it did. And that I kind of lost it along the way because of societal conditioning was my sense of spirituality.
Mm.
I did feel as a kid very connected to something bigger. That's part of the lying down and watching the clouds.
Yep.
Also the ocean. I've always been someone, I can sit on the beach and I can just watch the ocean rolling in and out all day long. I never find it boring. I find it so incredibly, innately satisfying and peaceful, because to me that connects to like my sense of spirituality. But that got overcome in parts of my life through the overlay of religion. And religion hasn't always enhanced my spirituality. It does now. I've found a home, a church home, and a faith that works for me. I had to explore that. You know, I was kind of one denomination in my life, grew up one way, and then became something else. And even within, you know, being now an Episcopalian, there are some Episcopalian churches that resonate with me and some that don't. So I think it's very important to find the right fit for that. But it's so important to me. And I find that now, especially that I'm not working and I don't have the daily distraction of having to worry about the next brief I'm writing and you know, getting the kids to school, making sure their homework's done, making dinner, ironing,
right.
A million things we do. I'm more open to exploring and feeling what my connection is to what I conceive God to be. Right. And that actually, I think, is very important, because for me, even back in childhood, there was a sense of trying to identify my purpose. Who am I?
Right.
What am I? And I would like to have a better sense of that.
Well, I think religion has its own social conditioning.
Absolutely.
And I think it can be good and I think it can be bad. And I think that looking at religion as a, and I'm talking religion, and I want to actually make a difference between, at least for me, that is different than spirituality.
Same here.
And so religion itself as a child is kind of daunting. It's like the devil, and it's like the good angel, the bad angel, it's heaven or hell, right?
But there was a time before that for me, before I learned all that, that I had a certain feeling about myself in connection with the
universe. Right.
And I think religion and spirituality are different, although religion can help you develop your spirituality if it doesn't start pushing you away from your innate feeling of your connection with God.
I wasn't in conflict with what you were saying. I was just saying, for me, mm-hmm. religion can be and was very conditioning. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that now there is a discernment between, for me, religion and spirituality. Mm-hmm. Spirituality is a place that is just, it brings awe sometimes. If we allow ourselves to sit in it and what that means to us. And there, you're right. When as a young child, I don't know if it's spirituality. I don't know if it's like dreaming. I don't know if it's, there's many words I could put to it. It's that feeling. There's peace in spirituality. There's mm-hmm. curiosity. But also if we want to talk about a spiritual journey, that might continue from childhood and somehow change a little bit, and then we find it again in midlife. It's being able to find who we are and be a better person to ourselves and to others. Mm-hmm. And I think when I thought of my childhood as well, even though we seem to be unedited in childhood in some ways, until life tells us that we need to edit ourselves. Mm-hmm. As we get older and we're on spiritual journeys or just in our journey, we get back to that unedited and unscripted piece that we find ourselves in the middle of our life, right?
Mm-hmm.
As my parents were getting older, they would just freaking say anything. they have become totally unedited. And I mean, even myself and people around me just speak, we speak our minds. I'm not a cusser, so I don't do that so much. But we, exactly as a child, like children are unedited.
Yes.
There is no filter. They just say what they want to say. And lo and behold, you become a clam. And then that clam opens up again and you just start being unedited again. And I love that. But now I see that it is kind of full circle, right?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I have always been a talker, partly why I'm a storyteller. I like to talk. I know when I was a kid, certainly as I get older as a kid, I started getting very negative nicknames around that, Chatterbox, Chatty Cathy.
Aww.
And I began to be embarrassed about speaking.
Conditioned you.
Yes. And it's only lately that I feel like I can speak again and that it's okay for me to do that. I mean, some of that, obviously, as a lawyer, I used to have to speak all the time in court, but I mean, about things that matter to me. And that's why I love this podcast.
Oh, this is the platform for you then.
Absolutely. Exploring a piece of me from childhood that I think was part of who I innately am, that I kind of gave up a little bit because people sort of told me to shut up. Now I don't want to shut up, and I'm not going to shut up.
I don't want you to, or this would end.
Right, and we want to keep this going. I totally get that. That chatterbox thing is not a bad label to have at this point in life.
You know, you think about the little things as you're a child that just make you so excited. I feel that way about our conversations and our podcast. It brings such innate joy to me. To be here.
Yes.
And to speak to you and to allow my mind to just go. It's the curiosity piece. Honestly, I'm curious about what I think. And sometimes I don't know until I start talking and allowing myself to think. And it's exciting to me to get to know myself in this way, because we are allowed to just, I mean, this is this is a platform in which we're allowing ourselves to really get to know ourselves as well,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is fun.
You know, I think one thing in childhood is that not giving a damn what other people think. And that is reflected here. Like, we have something to say. I hope it resonates with you listeners. But that's not all of the reason we're here. We're here for ourselves as well. And that's, you know, when you're a kid, you're playing because you want to play.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many words now that focus. They're all buzzwords. Finding your true self.
The inner child.
Becoming. Yeah, the inner child becoming. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's kind of what we're talking about right now. And I don't know. I mean, it's used in a lot of different contexts, but I also think that the main context it is used is in our age group of becoming and your child self and self-awareness. It is the perfect time to be able to be yourself.
How do you think people can achieve becoming themselves? What can they do to kind of facilitate that process?
I think it's what we have learned to do over the years, just figuring out what brought us innate joy. A good place is to look at our childhood, because that was innately who we were, right? And I'm not saying that becoming at this age is like the only way you're going to think that your life was worth living or had been worth living. All those middle years of dating and finding a partner and being a mother and everything I gave to my job, it was so worthy. It was so wonderful. I enjoyed every minute of it. But those are stages
mm-hmm.
that end up shifting. And so we come full circle again, kind of to that childhood where we have space to be curious and to find ourselves in that space where we don't have the same roles and responsibilities that we transitioned to from childhood on, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're back to that. So I think a good place to start, getting back to your question, is to find out who we were. Just sit in it a little bit. What brought you joy? It's a great place to start. It might not be where you end, because there's a lot of things out there now that you might not have been able to explore or be under the age of 14,
mm-hmm.
right? You live in different places. Technology's changed. Your availability to be able to do things has changed. I know I love swimming. I've always enjoyed swimming. And some of my fondest memories were swimming in Australia in the lagoon, swimming on a swim team, you know, going to the lake in Arkansas. And I find myself in water now anytime I can.
Mm-hmm.
I love immersing myself in water. And it is a childhood emotion that I have. But maybe somebody didn't have that experience. They didn't live by a lake or, you know, wasn't a swimmer. I think now they can explore those things that they find that others, their friends, say that they enjoy and like to do and brings them joy in exploring and trying those things as well.
Well, it's also, it may be something that you didn't do, but it's something you always maybe wanted to do.
True.
So I always wanted dance lessons. And I never got dance lessons as a kid. I'm still bitter about that. But, you know, I mean, I could take dance lessons now. You know, my husband and I
did
dance lessons. But I'm thinking about, like, dance lessons for myself.
Yeah.
The couple's dance lesson thing did not go well. But there's no reason I can't take dance lessons now.
Right.
I want to.
Actually, I have a friend exploring it for the both of us. We were in this. We went to the Kennedy Center for a Bee Gees concert,
mm-hmm.
and not the real Bee Gees, but cover band and music. I think they were from South Africa. I'm pretty sure they were from South Africa. We both walked away looking at each other and saying, okay, we need to learn to dance like 70s disco style. So she's looking it up right now. But that is something, like you were just alluding to it. I didn't think of that at 7 and 8 years of age. I always loved, like, dancing in my own little room. For no one to see. And maybe I do my 70s disco dancing the same way behind closed doors.
I can
but
teach
I
you 70s disco dancing. Oh, totally.
Okay. We have a teacher, Sean. I might take you up on that.
You may not know this, but when my kids were in elementary school, and I want to talk a little bit about how this relates to how we raise our kids. When my kids were in elementary school, I taught some after-school enrichment classes. And I would let my kids say, like, because I had, like, usually I work part-time. So I had, like, one or two afternoons a week that I could actually go to school after school and teach class. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you guys want to learn? And at one point they said, we want to learn disco dancing. I was like, seriously? They're like, yeah, we want disco. So I taught a disco dance class.
Oh, my gosh.
To a bunch of fourth and fifth graders. If I could teach them, I could
teach
you.
You can teach me, yeah.
But I did want to touch for a minute on this notion about how reclaiming our true selves affects to how we parent our children. Because there are a lot of women in sort of earlier phase of midlife than we are who still have children at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important. I mean, I certainly felt, and I don't fault my parents for this at all. I get it. They had expectations and desires for me. And I think they were all very well-intentioned and well-meaning. But they led me in a particular way to be a particular kind of woman because that's what they thought was right. And I bucked that some, mm-hmm. right? But certainly there was a shaping that was going on. And I would suggest to women who still have kids at home, who still have an influence over your kids, if you're going to shape them to find their true selves.
Right.
Give them room to explore. Give them room to fail. Mm-hmm. Give them room to follow their heart and be who they are. Watch your children. See what resonates with them and reinforce that, support that. Instead of being, oh, you can't be doing that. You need to be spending your time here. Does it, at the end of the day, does it really matter if they have above a 4.0 GPA? No. If they're giving up time to go do something that's fun, that feels good to them, I would suggest it doesn't matter that much. You know, we push our kids into sports because we want them to be the best athlete possible. What if they're just doing it at the rec level because that's what they enjoy? And it takes a lot of the stress off of them. So, you know, we can have an influence on how connected the next generation is with their inner children by letting them be the children they are.
Well, I think it does. It stems from somebody changing the parenting. And I think the new generation, the younger generation is finding themselves at and they're bucking back to societal norms or conditioning. But I think, you know, like you're saying, for the younger generation, it's usually our expectations of what we want our kids to be. It's not their expectations.
That's right.
And so I think that listening to them and letting them find themselves, like you are saying, is so important. And just our expectation, I used to tell my children, I had my kids did well in school, but I had one child was basically a B student. And I'm like, C's average. Mm-hmm. Well, most parents would like be choking and throwing up that I said that, because in Northern Virginia, in the DC area, no. A is the bar, and anything under it is failure. And so I think the expectations, and this is great parenting advice, as you just alluded to, is don't have those, your expectations shouldn't be your kids' expectations. Let them be themselves and find themselves, for sure. I think it's a great place to end, actually.
Before we wrap up, though, we have to see if Elizabeth has any questions.
Do you think the self we're becoming in midlife is actually the self we were always meant to be?
I actually think so. I think it's full circle, like it's talked in the podcast. I think finding yourself or your becoming doesn't have to be, but for me, it is kind of full circle. It's innately what brought me joy. Other things bring me joy, you know, and becoming now, but where I find my full fulfillment is finding myself that just happens to be so many pieces of my childhood.
I do. I think that life is a really beautiful thing. And we start out with certain proclivities, certain interests, sort of an innate sense of who we are. That some of that gets stripped away by society and it gets shaped in ways that maybe that are counterproductive to that. But also something else happens in those years between childhood and midlife, in those formative years when you're going to school and you're going to college and you're building a career and you're building a family, you learn a lot about yourself. And part of that learning occurs because you're forced into things that maybe you wouldn't have innately chosen. And you learn what you're really good at and what you really like and what you're really not good at. It may open up unanticipated opportunities for you that you wouldn't have found if you had only been the child you were when you were a kid. But I think it's really important at some point to come back full circle and take all that life experience and filter it back through your child eyes to see who you really are.
If you stripped away every role, mother, partner, employee, friend, who would be left?
Curiosity would be left for me. I can say it in one word.
I can't say it in one word. If I try to envision myself kind of standing alone without all of that, I actually come back to someone who's very curious about God and my purpose in the universe. That has just always been what I've wanted to figure out. What exactly am I here for? Because I really believe I'm here for a reason. That reason gets revealed through all these activities and connections and community and friendships. But at the end of the day, it's still me standing before God.